Welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. I'm Hazem Seeker. Germany is starting a new era without Chancellor Angela Merkel. She's stepping down after 16 years, leading her country and Europe through numerous crises, most recently the COVID-19 pandemic. So what's next? How will her successors take on the many challenges facing Germany and the European Union? Well, let's bring in our guest now to talk more about this. In Berlin, we have Ulrich Brückner, Professor of Political Science at Stanford University in Berlin. Joining us from Brussels, Rebecca Christie, a non-resident fellow at the independent think tank Bruegel. And in London, we have Matt Quartrup, Chair of Applied Political Science at Coventry University and the author of Angela Merkel's biography. A very warm welcome to all of you. So, Ulrich, if I could start with you then, since you are where it's all happening. What can we expect from this new German government?
Well, the new coalition won the elections with a promise that they will do things differently from Merkel. They promised to be a reform team, and they all stand for their selling points: social democrats for social justice, the environmentalists, the Green Party for climate change, and the liberals for more business-oriented, like economic priorities. And they all promise that this will be progress, whatever that means. But what we see in the elections is that the appetite for reform was on the one hand big enough to kick out the Christian Democratic Union from government, which for a party that has been in power for most of the years of the Federal Republic of Germany came as a shock. But on the other hand, the total appetite doesn't seem to be as high as a lot of people, especially who are concerned about climate change, would like to see happening. So there is continuity, and at the same time, there is change, but no radical change or a revolution.
Rebecca Christie, what does a new Germany mean for this new Germany mean for Europe and the rest of the world?
Germany has a chance to reset its leadership role within the European Union. During the pandemic, Germany was able to be much more of a fiscal leader and much more proactive in addressing issues than it had been during the euro crisis, when a lot of times Germany's role was to hold back and wait till the last minute before trying to find some way through the problem. If the new chancellor can continue that forward-moving momentum and continue keeping Germany at the forefront of looking for ways to stimulate the economy and contain the pandemic, it'll really be a chance to put Germany in a new light on the international stage.
Matt Quartrup, there are potential areas where all three of these parties could see friction. But on the arena of foreign policy, from the point of view of foreign governments, is this Germany likely to look that much different from the Germany that Angela Merkel led for 16 years?
I think it might actually look rather different. I think in foreign policy, the liberals have traditionally been more sort of focused on democracy and human rights. That was the case when Hans-Dietrich Genscher back in the day was the foreign minister. And it's also the case that when the Green Party was last in government, they had Joschka Fischer was the foreign minister, and he was extremely activist in his foreign policy. He was the one who ensured that Germany, for the first time since the Second World War, sent troops into battle in the crisis over Kosovo. The Green Party, as well as the Liberal Party, have been very critical of Russia. They've been very critical of China. So while the Social Democrats have traditionally had members of or elements within them who've been quite positive towards Russia in particular, that I think will change, especially as Annalena Baerbock is going to be the foreign minister. That said, it says in Article 65 of the German Constitution that the Chancellor determines the guidelines of policy. So if we will, there might be a little bit of a schism there in the government. So Scholz might try to push back a little bit. And that's going to be very interesting to see if he's able to and willing to and interested indeed in pushing back on foreign policy. But I think the fundamental thing is that it would be more vocal in their criticism of the likes of Russia.
Rebecca Christie, just picking up on what some of Mac Waltrip said there, do you expect this government to be to take a hard line on some of the foreign policy issues, particularly with regard to Russia and what it's doing in Europe right now with regards to Ukraine and Belarus and so on, and taking a tougher stance on China as well?
I agree that the mood toward Russia is likely to tighten up, and the Germans are likely to be a bit more critical where they can. They're in a tough spot right now, particularly because of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline that is still not online, and that puts Germany in a position of having to work with Russia more than some of Russia's critics might like. On China, I think it will be easier for the coalition to have a unified front in the message they want to send. There's been a lot of concern about human rights abuses from the coalition partners, and this is an area where I think they may be able to come together to hone their message and possibly find ways to even make it effective.
Ulrich Breuchner, this is something of a groundbreaking coalition, isn't it? It's been called the Three Traffic Lights Coalition because of the various colors that each party represents. You've got the Greens, and the Conservatives in there as well as the main governing party, and you know the expression of politics making strange bedfellows comes to mind. Is it going to be hard to keep all of those various factions happy?
I think from outside it appears as a major change. This is not a very polarized society, which means that Merkel moved the Christian Democratic Union to the center and also the Social Democrats, the Liberals and the Green cluster in the middle. So they tried really hard to highlight differences in the campaign, but all commentators saw more the similarities and the overlapping positions, which made it a very smooth discussion until we had a coalition agreement that nails down all the bullet points that this coalition is trying to address.
Mac Waltrip, if I could come back to you on this. What does Olaf Scholz bring to this government as a leader? What are some of his personal qualities? I know you mentioned earlier about foreign policy and how it's traditionally been run from the chancellery. That's something that Angela Merkel certainly did. Is that a tradition that he's likely to continue? And if it does, is that going to be a problem for the new foreign minister who's from the Green Party?
Well, I think if we can just start with Olaf Scholz first. One of the most eminent economists in Germany, Lars Feldt, who's one of the economic wise men, they have such an institution in Germany, he described their economic policy as Pippi Longstocking economics. And I think that wasn't meant as a criticism, but I think in some ways that's the positive thing you can see about Olaf Scholz. If you know your Swedish children's stories, Pippi Longstocking is a kind and strong little girl. Now, Scholz, of course, is not a little girl, but he's somebody who bases his policies on social justice, i.e. kindness. We will have a minimum wage that would go up. There'll be a focus on the social justice. But at the same time, we also be based on strength, in this case, economic strength. He has a track record as finance minister. Before that, he was a minister of labor in the first of Merkel government. So he has a track record. He has the fiscal strength. He is somebody who is willing to be very pragmatic. He's appointed as his economic advisor, somebody who used to work for Goldman Sachs, an economist with business background. So this combination of social justice and fiscal responsibility, I think, is what characterizes Olaf Scholz. And that's the thing that would also characterize Germany. I don't see that as being in any way opposed to what Annalena Baerbock or any of the other Green members of the government would be in favor of. The Green Party in many German states or Länder are in government with the Conservatives. They are in some ways economically to the right of the Social Democrats. If you look at some of the southern states, Rheinland-Pfalz, for example, the Green Premier there is probably in some ways to the right of the Social Democrats. So I think we can say that Scholz's government is economically in the center. It's based on pragmatism. And I think that's the way he would be governing. So in some ways, a continuation of Merkel, certainly in terms of stability.
Rebecca Christie, How do you see this government handling the whole issue of immigration and refugees, which is something that is coming to the fore over the last few weeks? There have been indications that they will formulate a more humane policy, if you will.
One way to do it might be to focus on the overall economy and the pandemic rather than the political implications of immigration. Certainly in Germany, whenever we've seen swings of the far right coming, they've come with a lot of emphasis on the danger of immigrants and the threat of foreigners. And a way to reset that issue might be to focus on economic growth, on coming together, to continue to contain the pandemic, and looking for ways to strengthen the economy. And workers from all over the world coming to Germany and contributing to Germany is a way that that can be framed to everyone's benefit, perhaps.
Yeah, Ulrich Bruckner, Rebecca mentioned the pandemic there. That's obviously the most immediate issue right now for this new government. How are they likely to respond to the current situation with the pandemic and the Omicron variant?
Well, on the one hand, the pandemic didn't appear equally in every part of Germany in the same way. So it made sense that a decentralized political system as the Federal Republic of Germany that gives a lot of power to the governors of the different 16 Länder can react differently, and they did. So it appeared as a cacophonic orchestra that every governor does things differently. But we also saw a lot of coordination happening on the federal level. And that's why everyone was very curious to see who will be nominated the new health minister. And we have a professor of epidemiology expertise who was basically every day in talk shows. And he's for many years a health expert of the Social Democrats, and he was nominated the health minister. So we will see basically a hardliner to fight the pandemic in the driver's seat. And it's very likely that the governors will respond to his guidelines.
Mac Vortrup, if we turn to climate change now, this government has said that it wants a fairer, more liberal Germany, and that translates to climate change policy, climate change being a priority. They said they're going to phase out coal. They accelerate the phasing out of coal by 2030 instead of the original target of 2038. Is that something that, first of all, is viable? And if it isn't, is that something that could come, that could cause friction with the Greens?
It is. One of the other things they're also going to do is that next year they're going to end reliance on nuclear power. The Green Party, in many ways, was a party that was established as an anti-nuclear party. And if they close that down, then they will have a little bit of a problem. That said, Germany has had an immense increase in the number of the use of renewables. There is some reliance on gas from the east, but it's not as bad, if you like, as a lot of people say. So there can be some issues that have to be dealt with. Germany will have to step up to the plate. But then again, she has done that before. So I think it is in everybody's interest to find a solution. But the phasing out of nuclear power is a problem from that point of view. Also, the Green Party in some ways already lost out. They had wanted to get the Ministry of Transport because they wanted to have limits on the speed limits on the German autobahns or highways, and that ministry went to the Liberal Party. So in some ways, the Liberal Party has already lost, if you like, the first round, and it's important to make sure that they're not perceived as losing out.
Yeah, I want to talk about some of that with Rebecca Christie. Is that how you see things as well?
Well, one thing we haven't talked about much is the financial aspect of all of this. And certainly coming into this, Germany is going to have to look at how much it's willing to spend on its energy infrastructure, on its climate infrastructure, on its digital infrastructure. Looking at ways to do that, to manage the digital and the climate transitions, while also navigating Germany's very tricky fiscal politics, is going to be a big challenge for this incoming government.
And this is because the finance ministry is going to be run by Christian Lindner, who is from one of the right-wing parties. Is that's been talked about as a potential area of friction?
That's certainly a potential area of friction, particularly on the issue of Germany's debt brake, which is a fiscal rule that determines how much Germany can borrow on the public markets based on a formula of things like economic growth and perceived economic danger. Scholz has been very proactive in wanting to change it. We should note that it is suspended right now during the pandemic, which has been one of the most successful and boldest measures that Merkel's government was able to bring about on its way out. If Scholz can continue that rethinking of the debt brake and revisiting it, and if the incoming finance minister, if his skepticism can be overcome or at least channeled in a way that allows Germany to make these investments, then I think there's a real potential for progress. If the debt brake comes in and Germany heads back towards the Schwarze Null, this idea that any type of public debt is dangerous in and of itself, then I think there will be a very hard time rising to these challenges.
Ulrich Brückner, how do you see Germany's economic policy evolving under this new government?
Well, we have an export model, which means that we produce things that the rest of the world likes to buy. And most importantly, we are part of the European Union and the single market. So all parties in the new coalition are dedicated Europeans, and they even go as far as declaring that the long-term goal is something like the United States of Europe, like a federal European state. Having said that, it would imply that the monetary union should be stabilized by something like a fiscal union. But this is, given what was just said about the constraints in the financial situation of of Germany and Christian Lindner being very skeptical about an enhanced fiscal competence of the European Union, not very likely to happen. So on the one hand, we depend on the global economic situation as such, including relations with China, but we also depend on the recovery of the European Union market with the 750 billion recovery plan that it actually boosts the economy to allow the German economic model to continue.
Max Vortrup, yeah, sorry, go ahead, jump in.
Yes, I think one of the interesting things about it is also you have to look at the small print. So overall, you're not allowed to have a deficit under the German constitution, but you are allowed to have deficit run by companies that have majority government shareholding. So what they have done rather cleverly to get around the debt brake is that a number of companies, for example, the housing government-owned housing company, can run a deficit. So a number of it's called in legal terms emanations of the state, government-owned companies that are controlled by the government, they are allowed to run a deficit, and therefore you have a legally clever way around this that will allow them in some ways to run a deficit. The only problem is that might fall foul of the German constitution. It might be challenged in the courts, and that is a whole new other headache. But I think they have tried to find, and they have found, a rather clever way around the debt brake.
Rebecca Christie, I'm going to give what's probably going to be the last word to you then.
The German Constitutional Court is a big question. It's good to mention that because a lot of the ways that Germany has been able to contribute internationally have been challenged at home through this court. And the court has been very clear in showing its own skepticism about how German law relates to European law. Going forward, a big challenge will be finding ways to contribute internationally and steering clear of what, from the outside, and I am not in Germany, look like kind of embarrassing showdowns between German law and European law. This is the sort of thing that we've come to expect from Poland and from Hungary rather than from Germany, and saying, wait a minute, national law might just be the thing here rather than European law. To succeed in the new coalition, Scholz is going to have to find a way to show that Germany will contribute to the strength of the European Union and keep it moving forward together.
All right. We are going to have to leave it there. We are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank all three of you for taking part in the discussion. Ulrich Brückner in Berlin, Rebecca Christie in Brussels, and Matt Quartrup in London. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Calvin Ang, Osama Aloni, Michael Harwood, and Jimmy Gedahun. Studio sound by Yasser Rahmani. The program was edited by Anirban Sarkar, Lynn Nguyen, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again on Wednesday.